we have quorum, and why don't we start the meeting off with introductions? And I'm going to start with.
I'm Chuck Adams, councilman.
Lily Gonzalez, councilman. Irma Parada, co-chair.
David Gonzalez, co-chair.
Oh, Lena Clark, council staff.
Jill Lambie Pons, council staff.
Mark Mulmer, council staff.
Eric Sutter, council member.
Ben Clemmon, council member.
Also, council member.
Bill Blue, HIV Health Services. Mike Schreiber, council co-chair. So why don't we go ahead and look at the agenda for today, see if there are any changes or additions?
I don't think that Thomas is able to join us. We might want to strike the CHEP part of CHEP and HHS updates.
Yes, Thomas is on vacation. So we will strike on CHEP 7, will just be HHS updates. Any other recommendations?
Yeah, actually, Dean is out as well.
Mm-hmm. Strike both.
Dean's up as well, yeah.
So why don't we just strike agenda item number 7?
There.
Is that okay with everybody? Unless, is there anything?
I haven't necessarily thought of what I would say, except to say, you know, we submitted the Ryan White Part A application 2 weeks ago and ending the HIV epidemic for the CARE dollars Tuesday. So,
and we're going to get to
tell
that.
You more about that.
Yep.
I think that's a big deal.
So we can consider agenda item 7 done, then. Any other recommendations? Seeing none, can we approve the agenda?
Yeah.
My consent is great. And let's look at the draft minutes from September the 19th. Trusting that everyone has read these already. There are no changes, recommended edits, or additions, then we can go ahead and approve the minutes.
I think I was here.
You were here, Ben?
Was I?
Was she?
Was she?
Were you here, Ben? Really, were you?
No.
Let's see, Ben.
I think I was. No,
I don't think you were.
I see you as present.
You were?
Yes, on September 19th, Ben Cavill. P.
Was she here?
We left early.
Right.
Oh, you left early, yeah.
So we can amend it to include Ben being here.
Remember that now. Does I remember?
So with that modification, then if we can go ahead and approve the minutes by consensus. Awesome. Announcements. Any announcements?
Welcome back.
Thank you. Mark.
The steering retreat has been scheduled for December 5th from 2:30 to 5. Here.
I think?
Yes.
Yes.
Here. Right. And we're not doing a social this year, but if we want to have a social after the retreat, council members can certainly go out and have a drink together with council staff in support.
So my announcement, in addition to that, is I won a scholarship for the Biomedical Prevention Conference.
I'll be there too.
Oh yeah. So yeah.
USCA repeat.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I will not be making the steering retreat. I fly back on that day, so I will not make it. Unfortunately. Yeah.
So that's two members of steering who won't be able to make it. Should we reconsider that date? Should we continue on?
Continue on.
Okay.
We can zoom you in though if you want to just call it on the flight.
I'll be
on
the flight.
No.
I have one announcement. Today was Susan Shear's last day in the epidemiology. And so they had a farewell sort of macro lunch thing for her in the atrium. And Lee Jewell actually spoke on behalf of the Planning Council to thank Susan for her work, for her diligence, her calm, her ability to take recommendations and critique from the council and turn them around. He did a really nice job, so I don't know who's taking over for Susan, but it was really kind of a bittersweet farewell for her, but the council was represented well. Any other announcements? Okay, we're zipping through this one. Okay, public comment. Zipping through that one. So why don't we go to number 6, Bill, and the epidemic report.
Hi, everyone.
So colorful.
I left copies over there. Was there enough copies for everyone to get one? I'm hoping to hear from you. What I'm trying to do is give something for everyone, which is enough information for folks who may not have heard it or kind of less used to this work or new to this work, and then enough details for those of you that are a little more policy blind type. So I'm wanting to do both of those. So I'll get started. So what I'm presenting to you guys on at the request of the council actually is a NOFO, a Notice for Funding Opportunity, that came out from HRSA, which is connected to the ETHE, ending the HIV epidemic. Very quick turnaround, I'm going to tell you more about that later, but this you can see kind of the description of that Notice for Funding. The second slide is kind of the overall arching kind of approach to the ending HIV epidemic, and you all may recall that our current president announced this initiative at his last State of the Union address, and the goal is within 10 years, and you can see column on the right, that arrow going down, 75% reduction in new infections in 5 years, and then a 90% in 10 years. Which translates to nationally the goal of being 3,000 new infections or less. So the funding actually officially begins in, actually for the prevention side began in 1990, but for the care side in 2020. So the kind of the goals of this funding, I'm going to get into more details, but I think what is kind of striking about it on the care side is they're looking for new and innovative models, and I think what also is striking is how quickly they roll that out. And you all know who get funding from us as an institution, a local institution, the city and county, we're not necessarily quick, but this is kind of happening at breakneck speed. So I'm going to kind of share with you our process about how we try to get good input, and based on the work that you guys have previously done along with others, to really make sure we're doing this right. On to the next slide. And some of you may have seen this before. So this is the funding. So the Ending the HIV Initiative. You guys have two slides per page. That's wondering why I was the only one turning it. Course to myself. So you can kind of see on the left-hand side the different agencies, federal agencies, into which the funding is going, and the current funding for the 2020 year. Kind of things to note within that, we know the least at this point about on the left-hand side on the right column, the HRSA MAI dollars and the SAMHSA dollars. I think we're going to be hearing more information in the next few months. The funding happens in two phases. We're in the first phase, which means in the first 5 years. And the funding is broken into tiers, and we're actually in the second tier, which is the amount of money that San Francisco qualifies. So after the first 5 years, the people that fall into the second phase will be added to this. So you can see the total funding for this coming year is $291 million, 70 of it for Ryan White. Just talking about our colleagues in prevention and part of your charge as well. The CDC grant for the planning portion of this, actually for the implementation portion, is due in December 19th. And as you all may recall, the planning grant, the first part of the planning grant is also due in December. So I think what I'll be sharing with you is this year one, kind of the horse and the cart are running right next to each other, and so hopefully year two we'll have a chance to kind of integrate. And so the CDC grant is also expected to start from March of 2020, which actually is good news, because when does the Ryan White Part A grant cycle start?
March
1st. March. So they're actually aligning something. So we go down from seven funding cycles to six. So that is good news, and I think in terms of, particularly for our providers, it's just a lot less of a headache. So I'll make a brief comment on the right. You can see there are 48 counties. San Juan, Washington, D.C., and seven states, and they're calling us the G57. That's a word. This is an interesting choice of words, but there it is. On to the next slide. I think that what I want to draw your attention to on this is the four goals at the bottom left there: reducing new infections, increased access to care, reduce disparities, and increased coordination. So one thing that was very, very clear in this grant was that they wanted to look at reducing and eliminating health equities. They wanted to really get us to the place where the things that we traditionally look at where we want to eliminate those health disparities. So a lot of the funding is going to focus on how we do that and the populations we address. And so I'll get to that a little bit later in the slide. So the next, these are kind of self-explanatory, so I'm going to kind of go through them quickly. Diagnose, I think everyone kind of knows what that means. Treat, and that's obviously where we come in, the care dollars will be coming in. And they're using the same traditional measures, maintenance and care and virologic suppression, so there's not a change in that. That's kind of where these dollars need to drive to. I will say it hasn't exactly switched to a pay-for-performance, but I have the feeling that our strategy was really to try and get programs that we could get going off the ground and show a difference because, as you'll see later, there's opportunity for increased funding, and we want to make sure that we're performing well so we're well-positioned to get more money as the epidemic moves forward. So prevent is the third strategy, and then respond. And this is, you know, if you guys remember the presentation on molecular biology, you know, the way they can do cluster detection, you know, and we need to respond to that as well. You know, as you kind of heard from our presenters and experts, in our city, that hasn't really borne a whole lot of fruit in terms of really detecting new people. It's people who've been out of care, and their partners have largely been in and out of care. However, the primary mechanism that we use to make sure we respond to that is the links team. People are familiar with links, they're intimately connected, and so we relink people back. Interesting to see if for other parts of the city, other parts of the country, like more rural areas or ex-urban areas, if that's kind of something they need to do more work on. But for us, it feels pretty much we're already doing it, so I don't think we'll be spending a lot of time kind of working on that pillar, except to respond to the feds so that they keep paying us to do our work. Okay, on to the next slide here. So at the point of this slide is that, you know, San Francisco has really done a phenomenal amount of work to align our visions at a lot of levels. You guys took leadership roles, kind of the integrated care prevention plan, then the roadmap and the getting to zero. So that work, we're in a lot better shape. I've talked to some colleagues in New York and Philadelphia, and they're just kind of like, oh my God, how are we going to do this in 3 months? And I stay quiet because largely because of the work you all have done. I think we're in a good position that we could kind of plug in what we knew were kind of the goals. So you guys probably remember the partner notice of funding opportunity 19-1906 is a number, which our colleagues over at CHEP and Prevention are doing, the integrated plan. And of course, we'll be working and participating in that, as will you, to come up with the plans for year 2 through 10 on this. The next slide, and here's where we get to the meat of it, the San Francisco application there. So I'm going to draw your attention first to the right, which you can kind of see the timelines. August 18th, we got this NOFO. It was actually due on yesterday, on the 15th, and it's going to start in March. In terms of, we qualified as an EMA, and we qualified because we were considered a high-burden county. Actually, the whole EMA qualified. We did speak with our partners. Marin just isn't showing the same data to drive this, and San Mateo didn't feel like there was any way that they could absorb additional funding because of their structure and their very small CBO population. So just for you guys to know, we didn't exclude them in the conversation. So is it tier? You guys remember it was tier 2. The minimum amount we can apply for was 750. The maximum was 4 million. Guess what we applied for? 4 million. Our philosophy on that is, one, we could spend it, and two, once you have the money coming in, if you're doing a good job, it's kind of easier than asking for more later. So we decided to do a ramp-up quickly strategy. So a couple of things to notice on the bottom left, they did try in some ways to flexibilize this, so it's a little bit different from Part A. We don't have to work with service categories. It isn't, your guys' role as of yet hasn't been defined as prioritization and allocation, but more kind of concordance on this of the prevention side. That said, we're obviously looking for a much more robust process than that, but we're not tied to these processes and these time dates and official things as of yet. That might change, but that's they've kind of not connected that way or to service categories. So again, the driver on this is a reduction on the prevention side of new cases, but for us in care, that means driving towards people to get to U equals U. So that's kind of the other piece I kind of want to emphasize here. Next slide. These, if you look on the left, and I would say if you want to focus on one of these things that is amongst the most important, these are the populations with the health equity disparities that we want to address, and the funding that we, where we identify to move the funding to is are these populations. You guys have seen the data, populations experiencing homelessness. It looks to me to be at least three times more predictive than any other way we kind of try and understand the human experience or categories of people. People who use drugs, so slightly broader than just folks that inject drugs. People who are incarcerated or have been recently released. Sorry, we're missing a release there. Just to be clear, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but we're hoping to expand what recently released means. Black and African Americans, and I would add to that, or you're leaving, we'll talk more about it later. If you guys remember from the data, folks that identify as more than one race are ending up with even slightly less virologically suppressed than African Americans. We don't really have good data on why that is. It might be a smaller set of people, but at least my staff feel like it's enough of concern that we're going to kind of explore that more and maybe thinking if there's specialized interventions that need to happen for this group of folks. Latino or Latinx, men who have sex with men. In pointing out here that our data in terms of areas is different than what the CRO HEPI looks at the whole city, actually. The Latinx and API MSM actually have higher rates of virologic suppression than do white men or African American or multiracial men. That said, if you guys saw the most recent data in terms of new infections, very, very high level. So for us, that's at least a tracking mechanism to see how new people get in to make sure that they get into care and get tested, and rather get onto medications and get virologically suppressed. And then the last category is trans women. Again, you guys have seen the data showing the differential health outcomes. So the next slide. So what we did was we kind of looked, we had kind of a blitz process with, and what we did, if you look to the kind of the red in the middle there, we had a series of forums with lots of people in DPH, so the co-chairs here, where we shared out information and got feedback. And then we also did over 30 interviews over about a three-week period. We spent about 3 or 4 hours a day asking folks, and a whole variety of folks, consumers, DPH experts in leadership, community leaderships, funded organizations, and then other parts of the system, for instance, BAHI, Black African American Health Initiative, people not necessarily connected, as well as some community organizations, particularly in transgender women, that kind of stuff. So we got a ton of input. We mostly just asked questions. What do you think the gaps are? What do you think is working well? What do you think the gaps are? And what would you do with this month? So we got a whole bunch of input. And then we also kind of had looked and have some knowledge of programs that are kind of could be more robustly funded. So you see here all of the different kinds of service expansion that we contemplated and put into the application. I will tell you guys the good side was the bad side. We had 40 pages, including 10 years of budget. So once you do that, like a couple paragraphs for each thing. So the good side of that is we're not necessarily beholden to a very, very specific thing because we didn't have enough space to describe it. So that's what we did. So that is, we submitted a couple days ago, and thank you for taking the time to read it. Appreciate that. And we're fingers crossed to get $4 million.
Which would be the first new infusion of care funding from the feds here at the city in
how many years?
20.
Whoa.
Yeah. We've only had reductions in flat funding. We've tracked 20 years.
Yeah, because the amount of funding we get this year for Ryan White is the exact same amount of money that we got in year two of the CARE Act.
Wow.
So that should give you a sense of what the $24 million cut looked like for the city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that we had talked about it at a co-chair, and we actually had the presentation at the last Planning Council meeting before the summit, and then coming off the Megatrends presentation. So I was really struck by the application. All the co-chairs are on part of the End in the Epidemic steering committee that are doing the big CDC grant, and one of the concerns was whether or not, because all the timelines are so fucked up, pardon my French, that they want us to do the planning for the money, but then all of a sudden the HRSA money comes out, which seems really out of place. But all the language that I read was completely consistent with
roadmap and with our integrated plan and with where we've been going with micro-limited, like everything. It was really kind of good. And the part that I liked the most was the part where you all point out that although this money is open to anybody with an HIV diagnosis, that the prioritization would be for people who are care eligible. So really targeting underinsured, uninsured, low income, people at the margins, people who traditionally experience sort of the injustice of public health benefits. So I thought it was brilliant. And really happy that you put that in there because that's where we know the money's needed the most. So.
Yeah, and this is additional money, so I should have done that caveat. So you'll notice who's not in there is HIV and aging, because if you look at it, as you get older and older, the 80-year-olds have the highest, 80-plus have the highest level of virologic suppression in our city, go figure. So that doesn't, we're not taking away money to focus on this population, it's actually adding in money. So that'd be an example of a population we're not focusing on with this amount of money.
Mark?
It looks like from slide 13 that the focus of the application was on bolstering and enhancing existing service modalities.